Dramas of the Court. We present the dramatic story of our court, where daily the unbiased administration of justice is dealt to rich and poor alike. These dramatizations in fictionized form are typical of the human interest dramas that daily crowd our court. Tonight, the Hastings case.
Gentlemen of the jury, the administration of good government is based on a sound judicial system. In considering the case before you, weigh carefully all the evidence and be convinced beyond all reasonable doubt of the guilt or innocence of the accused before delivering your verdict.
Round the verdict, Hastings!
I wonder how many of you remember the Hastings case. Not many, I should imagine. After all, the reason I remember it so well is because I was not only closely associated with the people involved, but was also called as a witness at the trial. Oh, by the way, in case you're wondering who I am, my name is Marsden, Geoffrey Marsden. I'm a stockbroker, and it was shortly after Eric Hastings came to work for me that I first met his mother. Barbara Hastings was an extremely wealthy widow, with one major interest in life, the buying of precious stones. It was almost a mania with her. Yet, even though she'd think nothing of spending hundreds of pounds on an emerald or a ruby, I've known her to walk half a mile rather than pay a threepenny tram fare. Yes, she was a strange woman. All the same, there was something very likable about her, and it was not long before we'd become quite good friends. Then, late one afternoon, about 3 years ago, while I was sitting in my office...
Oh, darn that phone. Hello?
That you, Jeff?
Yes, who's that?
It's me, Barbara. Sorry to trouble you like this, but could you come over and see me? Something dreadful's happened.
What?
I'd rather not say over the phone. Please come, Jeff. Please.
Right, I'll be with you in about 20 minutes.
Jeff, thank heaven you finally got here.
Oh, Barbara, what is it?
I've been robbed.
What's that?
My sapphire pendant and earrings. They've been stolen.
When?
Last night, while I was asleep.
You're quite sure they've been stolen?
Oh, no doubt about it. I locked them in my safe just before I went to bed. And this afternoon, when I went to the safe again, they were gone.
Have you notified the police yet?
No, I thought I'd speak to you first.
Well, then you'd better get in touch with them at once.
Very well.
Just a moment. Do any of the servants know?
Only my maid, Margaret. She was with me when I opened the safe.
Did you tell her not to say anything about it to the others?
Yes.
How about Eric?
I tried to get in touch with him when I was ringing you, but he wasn't there.
I wonder. Yes, it'll explain everything.
What is it, Jeff?
Oh, nothing, Barbara. Now, about the police.
I'll go and call them.
Police arrived while I was still there, and early that night, as a result of certain information I had given them concerning events that had previously taken place in my office, they arrested Eric Hastings and charged him with the theft of his mother's jewels. The case aroused quite a deal of interest, and when it finally came on for hearing some 4 or 5 weeks later, the courtroom was packed. The first witness for the Crown was one of the policemen to whom Mrs. Hastings had reported the robbery. His evidence was of a purely routine nature, and when he left the witness box, I took his place. After preliminary questioning, the Crown prosecutor said,
"On the day before Mrs. Hastings' jewels were stolen, I believe you had rather an unusual conversation with her son, Eric."
"Yes, that is so."
"Mr. Marsden, I'd like you to tell the court exactly what was said during the course of that conversation.
Well, as soon as I arrived at work that morning, I asked my secretary to tell Eric that I wanted to see him at once. A few minutes later, he came into my office.
Oh, I believe you want to speak to me, Mr. Larson.
Yes, Eric. Sit down, will you?
Oh, thanks.
Eric, I'm afraid what I'm going to say to you isn't going to be very pleasant. While I was working back last night, I made a rather disturbing discovery.
Yes, sir.
You remember those bombs I asked you to place in the strong room for me?
Yes.
They've disappeared. You were the last person to handle them. Do you know where they are?
Yes, I do, sir. I took them.
You mean you've stolen them?
No, sir. I merely borrowed them, that's all.
Borrowed them?
I needed some money urgently. £500. So I handed those bonds over as a security.
To whom?
To a moneylender. I was hoping I'd be able to redeem them again before you discovered they were missing.
You placed me in a very awkward position, Eric. By rights, I should inform the police.
Please, Mr. Marsden, don't.
I don't want to. And yet...
Perhaps if I were to return those bonds, sir.
Very well, Eric. If those bonds are back in this office within 48 hours, we'll say no more about it. But if they're not, then I'll have no alternative but to notify the police immediately.
You won't have to do that, Mr. Marsden. I'll get that money and return those bonds somehow. I swear.
And were those bonds returned, Mr. Marsden?
Yes.
When?
Eric handed them to me himself the following afternoon.
I see. And now, Mr. Marsden, I'd like you to tell the court of your phone conversation with Mrs. Hastings. What happened after you arrived at her home?
This I did, and some 10 minutes later, my evidence came to an end. Then, as the Crown Prosecutor resumed his seat, counsel for the defense began his cross-examination.
I believe you said, Mr. Marsden, that my client returned those bonds to you during the afternoon.
That's right.
At what time during the afternoon, do you remember?
About half an hour before Mrs. Hastings phoned me.
Did you make any comments when he handed the bonds to you? For example, did you ask him where he'd got the money to redeem them?
Not quite as bluntly as that.
But you did ask him.
I said I hoped he'd come by the money honestly.
What was his reply?
That he'd won it at the races.
Did you believe him?
At the time, yes.
At the time? But not now, eh?
I don't know. I'd like to believe he was telling the truth. But after Mrs. Hastings informed me of her loss, well, it was such an odd coincidence.
That you finally told the police about those bonds.
I thought it my duty to tell them.
And as a result, my client was arrested.
That wasn't the only reason he was arrested.
No, perhaps not. But it was your statement that first aroused their suspicions, wasn't it?
Yes, I suppose it was.
Thank you, Mr. Martin, that's all.
The next witness was Barbara herself. And within a few minutes, she was telling the court of all that had happened during the 24 hours preceding the actual discovery of the theft.
I had been invited for a very important dinner that evening, and as I knew all the other women would be wearing their jewels, I decided to put on some of mine, too.
Yes, go on.
After I had taken the case containing the pendant and the earrings from the safe, I placed it on my dressing table and I went and had a bath. When I returned, I found Eric standing by the dressing table, holding the pendant in his hand.
Oh, hello, Mother.
Well, Eric, what are you doing here?
Waiting for you. I say, this is quite some stone, isn't it?
It should be, considering the price I paid for it.
What did it cost you?
$1,500. That was with the earrings, of course. But it wasn't just to find out the value of my jewels that you're waiting for me, was it?
Oh, no, of course not. Mother, I need your help.
Oh, Eric, you're not going to ask me for money again, are you?
Yes, I want you to give me a check for...
I'm sorry, but you can't have it.
Mother, please, it's important.
I've given you my answer, Eric. I don't wish to discuss the matter any further. Besides, I'm in a hurry.
You know, sometimes I can't understand you at all. You'll give £1,500 for a pendant like this without batting an eyelid. And yet...
By the way, if you've quite finished playing that pendant, I'd like to put it on. Thank you. And now, would you please go and tell Margaret I want her? I'll never be dressed in time.
But... Oh, very well, Mother.
Margaret came in a few minutes later, and about half an hour after that, I left the house.
When did you return, Mrs. Hastings?
A little before 10.
And then what happened?
I went straight up to my bedroom. Margaret was waiting there for me. And as I entered, she looked up and said in rather a surprised tone,
"Oh, you're back early, aren't you, Mrs. Hastings? I wasn't expecting you for another hour at least."
"I'm not feeling very well, Margaret. I think I must have eaten something that disagreed with me."
"Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am."
"Yes. Yes, it really quite spoilt my evening."
"Would you like me to get you something?"
"Hand me my jewel case first, will you please?" "Thank you. Thank you. Then, when you put my clothes away, you might bring me a glass of warm milk."
"I'll go very well, Mrs. Hastings."
About 15 minutes later, after she'd helped me to bed, Margaret left the room.
"And how long was it before she came back?"
"She didn't come back."
"But what about your glass of warm milk?"
"Eric brought it in to me."
"Did he often do that?"
"No, that was the first time in years."
"Hmm. And now will you go on with your story, Mrs. Hastings?"
"Well, the next thing I remember was someone shaking me vigorously. Slowly I opened my eyes to discover that it was broad daylight. Then as I looked up, I saw Margaret staring at me anxiously."
"Oh, Mrs. Hastings, thank heaven you're awake at last."
Oh, Margaret. Oh, what's the matter?
Well, you were so sound asleep, I thought something must have happened to you. I've been shaking you for a good 5 minutes or more."
"Oh, then it was... Oh, my head."
"Mrs. Hastings, you're not ill, are you?"
No, I don't think so."
"Then what's wrong? You're acting almost as if you'd been drugged."
"Matter of fact, Margaret, that's exactly how I feel."
Would you like a glass of water?"
"Oh, no. I'll be all right in a moment. It's just... Oh, dear. Oh, it's so close in here."
"Well, I don't wonder. All the windows have been closed."
"Yes, I shut them myself when it began to rain."
"Oh, are you sure I can't get you something, Mrs. Hastings? You're smelling so fresh."
Before I could stop her, Margaret had left the room.
"Did anything else happen during the day, Mrs. Hastings? Anything that might have some bearing on this case?"
"No, not that I can remember."
"And when did you finally discover that your pendant and earrings were missing?"
"Late that afternoon, about 5 minutes before I rang Mr. Marsden."
"Thank you, Mrs. Hastings, that is all. Your witness."
But before counsel for defense could begin his cross-examination, the court adjourned for lunch.
"Court adjourned!"
In just a moment, we shall continue with our story of the Hastings case. But first, a word from our announcer. Here once again is Geoffrey Marsden to tell you the rest of his story of the Hastings case. As soon as the court had resumed after its luncheon adjournment, Barbara returned to the witness box, and a few moments later, counsel for the defense began his cross-examination.
"In the course of your evidence, Mrs. Hastings, you've made several references to a safe. Exactly what type of a safe is it?"
"A wall safe with a combination lock."
"Where is it?"
"In my bedroom."
"How is it hidden?" "It is hidden, I presume?"
"Behind a small picture."
"And to open the safe, you have to remove this picture from the wall, do you?"
"Yes."
"Do many people know where that safe is?"
"Oh, quite a number. My son, my maid, all my servants, in fact."
"Anyone else?"
"Yes, several of my friends. Mr. Marsden, for example."
"I see. Now, with regard to the combination, have you ever told it to anyone?"
"No, never."
"Then, Mrs. Hastings, you're the only person who knows how to open that safe."
I thought I was, but after what's happened, apparently I was mistaken."
"Do you keep a copy of the combination in the house at all, to refresh your memory in case you should ever forget it?"
"Not in the house."
"But you do keep a copy of it?"
"Yes. Yes.
Where?
In my safe deposit at the bank.
Are you the only one who has access to it, Mrs. Hastings?
My son has been to it several times for me.
Anyone else?
Yes. Margaret, my maid.
Then either of those two persons could have learnt the combination of the safe without you knowing it.
Yes. Yes, I suppose they could have.
Tell me, Mrs. Hastings, are you a light sleeper?
Ordinarily, yes.
Why do you say ordinarily?
Because on the night the robbery was committed, I had been drugged.
You're quite convinced of that?
Yes, quite convinced of it.
How do you think that drug was administered to you?
Why, in the glass of warm milk, of course.
Do you ever take sleeping pills, Mrs. Hastings?
No, never.
Does anyone in the house take them?
Not that I know of.
I see. When your son brought that milk into you instead of your maid, were you surprised?
A little.
When did you drink that milk?
Well, I took a few sips of it while Eric was still with me.
And then finished it as soon as he had gone, eh?
Yes.
Did it taste at all peculiar?
No. No, it didn't.
When did you finally decide that you had been drugged?
Well, it was Margaret who first gave me the idea. Then that afternoon, after I discovered the loss of my pendant and earrings, I was sure of it.
What first aroused your suspicions? What made you go to the safe that afternoon?
The picture. Margaret noticed it was hanging at an angle. As soon as she had drawn my attention to it, I unlocked the safe and took out my jewel case. Then when I opened it and saw that the pendant and earrings were missing, I realized at once what had happened.
You're quite sure you locked them in the safe?
It was one of the first things I did after I had returned home the previous evening.
Now, Mrs. Hastings, just one final question. Were the pendant and the earrings insured?
Yes.
For how much?
£1,500.
Thank you, Mrs. Hastings. That is all.
The final witness for the Crown was Margaret Booth, Mrs. Hastings' maid. The major part of her evidence was of a purely corroborative nature, and it was not until she had finished confirming Barbara's testimony that the Crown prosecutor at last said,
"Tell me, Miss Booth, do you ever take sleeping pills?"
"No, never."
Do you know anyone living in the Hastings house who does?
Yes, Mr. Eric.
Silence! Silence in the court!
And now, Miss Booth, there's just one other point I'd like to clear up. When you went to get Mrs. Hastings' milk, I believe the accused spoke to you.
Yes, he stopped me in the hall just after I'd come out of her room, and he said that.
That was my mother I heard come in just a few minutes ago, wasn't it, Margaret?
That's right, Mr. Hastings.
She's home early, isn't she?
She isn't feeling well, so she's gone to bed.
Have you put her light out yet?
No, I'm just going to take her a glass of warm milk.
Will you let me take it into her? Please, Margaret. I must speak to her before she goes to sleep.
Oh, very well then, Mr. Hastings.
When you returned with the milk, did Mr. Hastings take it into her immediately?
No. He hesitated a few minutes. In fact, as I went downstairs again, he was still standing outside the bedroom door.
That is all, Miss Booth, thank you. Your witness. Miss Booth, a few moments ago you said my client took sleeping pills. How do you know that?
He told me so himself.
When?
About a week before the robbery. He had a small bottle in his hand at the time, and when I asked him what was in it, he said there were pills to make him sleep.
And now, Miss Booth, after you handed Mr. Hastings that glass of milk, did you see him drop anything into it?
No, I didn't.
When you awakened Mrs. Hastings the next morning, what made you so sure that she'd been drugged?
Well, she seemed so dazed.
It wasn't because you knew she'd been drugged, was it?
I don't know what you mean.
Then I'll put it to you another way, Miss Booth. I'm suggesting that you took some of those sleeping pills from my client and placed them in Mrs. Hastings' milk yourself.
Oh, that's not true.
After all, you had ample opportunity. Just as you had ample opportunity for learning the combination of the safe. Then, when Mrs. Hastings was asleep, you crept into her room and stole that pendant and the earring.
Oh, no. No, it's lies. Lies, all of it. You've no right to say such things.
A few moments later, Margaret left the box, and the Crown case came to an end. The first witness for the defense was Eric Hastings, the accused. And under the skillful questioning of his counsel, it was soon apparent that he was creating a more than favorable impression on the members of the jury. But when the Crown Prosecutor began his cross-examination, this impression quickly faded.
And now, Mr. Hastings, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions regarding those bonds you borrowed from Mr. Marsden.
Yes?
You say you won the money to redeem those bonds at the races.
That's right.
£500, wasn't it?
Yes.
Rather a large amount to win at the races, don't you think?
I was lucky. I backed a rank outsider. Rampart in the second race. 50-1.
I see. Mr. Hastings, are you in the habit of taking sedatives?
No, I'm not.
Then why did you suddenly buy a bottle of sleeping pills?
Well, because I was worried about those bonds.
I see. And this constant worrying kept you awake at night, did it?
Yes. And so, in order to get some sleep, I bought a bottle of pills.
Tell me, Mr. Hastings, why were you so anxious to take that milk into your mother? What did you want to speak to her about?
I wanted to persuade her to let me have the money I needed. But she wouldn't listen to me. Made me leave almost immediately.
After Margaret had given you the milk, why did you hesitate outside the door?
I was trying to make up my mind whether to tell her the truth or not about the bonds and why I needed the money. I was desperate.
So desperate that in order to obtain that money, you decided to drug your mother with those sleeping pills you'd brought and then steal her pendant and earring.
No, you're wrong.
And then the next day, having disposed of those jewels, you made up that story about winning the money at the race.
It's not true, none of it. I didn't drug my mother, nor did I steal her pendant and earring. You've got to believe me.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hastings, but I prefer to believe facts. And those facts prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that you and you alone are guilty.
It was at this point that the court adjourned for the day. That night I went to visit Barbara at her home. She seemed strangely ill at ease, and I'd been with her for about half an hour when she suddenly turned to me and said,
Jeff. Jeff, you don't really think the jury will find Eric guilty, do you?
I'm sure of it, Barbara. After all, he had both the motive and the opportunity.
But what about Margaret?
Opportunity, but no motive.
No. No, Jeff, no, they can't find him guilty. They mustn't.
Rather ironical, isn't it, Barbara?
Ironical.
You never thought for one moment that such a strong case would be built up against Eric, did you?
I don't know what you mean.
It's no use, my dear. You know as well as I do that your pendant and earrings weren't really stolen.
But of course they were stolen.
No. You took them from the safe yourself.
But that's ridiculous. I was asleep. I'd been drugged.
You weren't drugged, Barbara. You were only pretending. Why, you've admitted that in your evidence.
I've admitted it?
So completely that... Do you remember saying that when Margaret awakened you, she commented on the fact that all your bedroom windows had been closed?
Yes, I remember it.
You shut those windows yourself, didn't you?
When it began to rain.
It did rain that night. Round about 12:30. But according to your story, Barbara, you went to bed and drank that milk shortly after 10. If you'd been drugged, you couldn't have been awake 2 hours later.
Oh. Jeff, what a fool I've been.
Why did you do it, Barbara?
Collecting precious stones is a very expensive hobby. I was badly in need of money.
But why pretend that you'd been robbed? If you needed money, why didn't you sell some of your stones?
Sell my stones? Jeff, you realize what you're saying? Why, I love all my stones so much that if ever I had to part with any of them, I think it would break my heart.
Do you mean as much as that to you, do they? I had no idea. But I still don't understand. Why did you pretend that you'd been robbed?
That pendant and the earrings were heavily insured.
Of course. You faked the robbery in order to get the money from the insurance company.
Yes, yes. Yes, and I'd have got away with it, too, if...
If such a strong case hadn't been built up against Eric.
Oh, he's my son. I can't let him go to prison for a crime he didn't commit.
Then, you're going to tell the truth, are you, Barbara? You're going to confess that you stole those jewels yourself?
Yes, Jeff. There's nothing else to do.
As was only to be expected, Barbara's confession in court the next morning caused quite a sensation. Eric was released immediately. A few weeks later, Barbara was committed to trial, and on being found guilty of having faked a robbery in order to defraud the insurance company, was sentenced to a term of imprisonment. A stupid fraud by a foolish woman. It seems no time at all after the judge passed sentence that the case was forgotten and the Hastings case was relegated to the dusty files of legal history.
In a moment, I'll return with further news of these real-life dramas of the court. But first, your announcer.
The court is adjourned until next week.
Be listening next week, same time, same station, when we present another real-life story in Dramas of the Court. This feature is a Grace Gibson radio production produced by Reg Johnson.